Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the New York Times Travel Section, read by Michelle Wexler. This is being recorded on March 29th, 2024. Today, we will be reading the following main articles. Can Reed Hastings disrupt skiing? Written by Gordy McGroves. And in the Frugal Traveler, credit card swipe fees are going down. Are points going with them? Written by Elaine Glusak. And following up with miscellaneous articles. We begin with the first article, Can Reed Hastings Disrupt Skiing? The Netflix co-founder bought Powder Mountain in Utah and is turning half of it into a private club for wealthy homeowners who pay a hefty annual fee. Will the public-private model fly? This by Gordy McGroves. On a Monday morning in early March, Reed Hastings, the billionaire co-founder and former chief executive of Netflix, clicked into the bindings on his snowboard and started off down one of the slopes at Powder Mountain, a ski area in Utah's northeast corner. He quickly veered off the groomed trail into some well-spaced trees, and as he made turns over bumpy snow, you could hear his edges scratch against patches of ice. Not as good as I was hoping, he said at the bottom, but still not bad. Despite the less than ideal conditions, Mr. Hastings, 63, seemed to be enjoying the perks that come with his new gig, ski area owner. I used to snowboard about 10 times a year, he said. Now getting out is part of the job. Last September, Mr. Hastings bought a controlling interest in Powder Mountain for an undisclosed sum, inheriting more than $100 million in debt. Not long after, he announced that he was adopting a business model never before tried in the ski industry. He would make 2,000 acres of the mountain's terrain private, accessible only to people who owned homes in an enclave atop the mountain and who paid a membership fee expected to run between $30,000 and $100,000 per year. The rest of the ski area would remain open to the public, underwritten by the private operation. The move, he said, was a way to compete with the multi-mountain passes like Icon and Epic, without drawing the crowds that come with them. All of the independent ski areas are looking for ways to survive, he said. Going boutique, higher-end, private is probably where they need to go. Mr. Hastings embraces the notion that he can disrupt the ski industry the way he disrupted entertainment, though he admits he's learning the ski business on the fly. Will it work? We'll have to wait and see, said Rick Call, 71, the longtime editor of Ski Area Management, a trade publication. But I wouldn't bet against the guy who started Netflix. Rickety chairlifts and charm. With 8,464 acres of skiable terrain, Powder Mountain, which averages around 360 inches of snow each season, is one of the largest ski areas in the United States. All of that terrain is on private land. Most ski areas either lease their land from the U.S. Forest Service or operate on a patchwork of public and private land. Powder has rickety chairlifts and aging day lodges that imbue the place with a certain air of nostalgia. Adding to the charm is that, upon descending some runs, getting back to the lift requires hopping on an old bus. And because Pow Mow, as it's affectionately off the beaten path and has very limited nearby lodging, there are never any crowds. But the ski area, like many other independently owned resorts, has never been able to make money. Summit, an event hosting group, bought it in 2013 and had huge plans to build a village with 500 homes, restaurants, bars, and possibly even a neuroscience lab and high-altitude performance center. But it failed to sell many of the home sites, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars for as little as a quarter acre of land, and the ski area continued to lose money. Mr. Hastings, fed up with crowds at heavily developed Park City, had built a home at Powder in 2021. When Summit decided it wanted out, he swooped in. "I felt I had to do it to preserve the experience here," he said. Mr. Hastings, whose net worth is $5.98 billion, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, immediately invested $100 million of his own money in the ski area, paying off a portion of the debt and purchasing four new chairlifts, which are set to be installed this summer. He is also planning to build two day lodges with restaurants, private rentals, and retail stores for the mountain's private side, and a 40,000-square-foot lodge that will serve as an afternoon and evening hub for members and feature a state-of-the-art spa. Shortly after the announcement, Mr. Hastings pulled all existing lots on the mountain off the market. When he relists them, he said, the starting price will be $2 million. On Friday, he announced that he had also purchased 2,400 acres of terrain adjacent to the ski area's existing boundary, which will also only be accessible to members. His bet is that if he can sell all the home sites, membership fees for the private portion of the ski area will pay for overhead and improvements on both the public and private sections. The private experience. Mr. Hastings isn't the only ski area owner with the notion that privatization might be a means toward profitability. In 2022, the owners of Homewood Mountain Resort in Homewood, California, announced plans to restrict season pass and day ticket sales to certain Homewood homeowners. After public outcry, that plan was scrapped, according to a spokeswoman for the resort. The new owners of Wyndham Mountain Resort in New York announced in October that they would charge a membership fee starting at $175,000 that would give members access to special amenities and let them ski the slopes in the mornings before they open to the public. The Yellowstone Club, which was founded in 1997 in Big Sky, Montana, is perhaps most similar to Mr. Hastings' model. Club members have access to more than 2,700 acres of private ski and snowboard terrain, and if they also have a pass to Big Sky Resort, which shares a border with the club, can ski directly onto Big Sky's 5,800 acres of public slopes. Before skiing together, Mr. Hastings and I sat on brown leather sofas in his Powder Mountain Village home, a cylindrical-shaped modern house with a concrete kitchen island, an impressive-looking espresso machine, and panoramic views of the Wasatch Mountains and Ogden Valley, as he explained to me why the changes at the ski area were necessary. I'm investing a lot of money in Powder Mountain, but my plan was never to subsidize it, he said. My passion is the charities that I work with, but I never saw this as a charitable endeavor. As he looked at the mountain's finances, he said, it became clear that we needed to do something significant. In the end, that something was leveraging the mountain's available real estate. We decided that we needed to lure people here by offering a private experience that they can't get anyplace else, he said. If his plan pans out, Harris Sondak, the former mayor of Alta, Utah, and a professor of the University of Utah's David Eccles School of Business, said that more ski areas might adopt a public-private model to increase revenue. Running a ski area is expensive, and any new way to make money is often embraced, he said. In addition to taking part of the mountain private, Mr. Hastings is raising the price of a season pass to $1,399 from $1,259. A season pass for seniors 75 and older, which used to be free, will now cost $1,049. The number of season passes sold, which had been capped, will no longer be limited, though the number of day tickets will. Much of the ski community, particularly locals, was upset by the changes. "I'm very concerned," said Aaron Vexler, 48, who has owned a condominium at Powder Mountain since 2012. "They're severely limiting the terrain, raising prices, and also selling more passes. How do you sell more passes and keep the ski area uncrowded?" Others, feeling as though Mr. Hastings is only interested in making money, gave the new owner a nickname, Greed Hastings. During our conversation, Mr. Hastings pointed out that three of the new lifts he is putting in will provide access to public terrain. As part of the announcement of the new private terrain, Mr. Hastings also said that more than 1,000 acres of terrain will be added to the public side of the ski area, opening in 2025. All the new terrain will help spread people out and help keep the ski area uncrowded, he said. Checking out the new terrain. After my runs with Mr. Hastings, Kevin Mitchell, Powder Mountain's general manager, and I hopped in a small snowcat to explore some of the new private terrain in an area known as Davenport, which is currently used for guided cat skiing. After a 15-minute ride, we got out and put on our skis to descend a steep slope, making smeary turns on untouched snow through the trees. I was impressed. But when we got back into the cat and headed around the bend, I was astonished. Above us, I saw steep, craggy pitches, terrain that's so challenging it has garnered attention from the professional snowboarder Travis Rice, who has created a series of extreme snowboarding competitions known as Natural Selection. Mr. Mitchell said Mr. Rice was considering holding one of his events there. A lift is planned for the area, though for next season, members will ride a snowcat to the top. Before venturing into Davenport, I'd wondered if the existing slopes that were becoming private were appealing enough to entice well-heeled skiers and snowboarders to throw down on $2 million lots and high membership fees. With Davenport, the private offering is the total package. The overall experience for the private community will feel integrated but elevated, said Alex Zhang, Powder's chief creative officer. The homeowners have access to premium conveniences such as ski-in, ski-out housing, upscale lodges, and private lifts, resulting in untracked powder that lasts for days. A few days later, we checked out the new public terrain. A large portion of it is known as Don't Mention It, or DMI for short. It was named by backcountry skiers who found the descents there so good that they didn't want anybody else to know about them. After a short hike beyond the ski area boundary, I was able to get a full view of the slopes and could see why they so coveted them. Dozens of steep, long runs and chutes wind down the vast expanse, with huge boulders jutting out of the land like prehistoric monuments. A big open bowl makes up much of the new terrain, but extreme skiers and snowboarders will drool over the north-facing slopes, which trump the skiing in Davenport and, when they open, will likely be considered some of the best skiing in the country. There will be a lift back here, and maybe two lifts, Mr. Mitchell said. We have a year's worth of planning to do. Fortunately, I didn't have to wait that long. I dropped onto a slope and skied through well-spaced trees, descending the length of nearly 7 football fields. It hadn't snowed much in about 8 days, but the run still held light powder that drifted over my boot tops. At the bottom, my legs were burning, and I had a frozen grin on my face. Traditions unchanged. One day after skiing, I grabbed a stool at the Powder Keg, a bar at the mountain that's famous for its greasy burgers and its old-school ambiance. I drank a beer and listened to a local woman strum her guitar and belt out folk tunes. None of that will change. Though Timberline Lodge, the building that houses the powder keg, will get an upgrade, Mr. Hastings said he is intent on keeping many of Powder Mountain's sacred spots and traditions unchanged. When finishing runs in the area known as Powder Country, for example, you'll still get on a bus back to the lifts. You can't just tear down a building, put up a new one, call it the same thing, and expect people to feel the same way about it, Mr. Hastings said. Mr. Hastings said it's that old-school vibe that makes Powder Mountain special. We're building a luxury experience on the private side of the mountain, he said, but many of the homeowners will still ski the public side and want to experience the parts of Powder Mountain that you won't be able to get in the village. At the time of my visit, Mr. Hastings had college friends visiting. I sent them to Powder Keg for lunch, he said. It's one of my favorite places to eat. That story can read Hastings' Disrupt Skiing by Gordy McGrose. Next up in the Frugal Traveler, credit card swipe fees are going down. Are points going with them? A new agreement by Visa and MasterCard to reduce fees charged to merchants may drain the lucrative rewards that grant free travel to many credit card users. This by Elaine Glusak. Elaine Glusak is the Frugal Traveler columnist focusing on budget-friendly tips and journeys. On Tuesday, the largest credit card companies in the United States reached an agreement with merchants to reduce the so-called swipe fees retailers pay for accepting credit card payments, potentially saving the retailers $30 billion. These fees also help fund the credit card rewards programs that many travelers redeem for things like free flights and hotel stays, leading points hawks to wonder, are loyalty programs at risk? Here's what we know so far about the changes. What are the terms of the deal? Last year, credit card payments generated an estimated $72 billion in fees paid by merchants, which are generally passed along to customers in the form of higher prices. For nearly 20 years, merchants have been seeking reductions in the fees they pay Visa and MasterCard for handling transactions where the cards are used. The proposed settlement, awaiting approval in a federal court, reduces and caps those fees for 5 years. It would also allow merchants to potentially charge consumers more based on the card they pay with. For example, a person paying with a premium card like the Chase Sapphire Reserve, which costs $550 a year, could be charged more than someone paying with the more basic Chase Sapphire Preferred card with an annual fee of $95. Why does it matter? The majority of the fees collected go back to the banks that issue the credit cards. Those banks have used the funds to push premium credit cards that offer loyalty points, which can be redeemed for free travel and other perks. The cards with the biggest benefits tend to be those that charge higher swipe fees. While the reduction in the fees collected sounds small, averaging at least 0.07%, they represent an estimated $30 billion over the 5-year term of the deal, which banks could try to make up by reducing points perks. It's reasonable to think that, said Brian Kelly, the founder of The Points Guy, a news site devoted to maximizing credit card points. While he speculated that banks will be able to find other ways to make up the difference, he acknowledged that a points squeeze could emerge. Opportunities to earn probably aren't going to flourish, he said. The idea that merchants could charge more to the holders of premium perks-rich cards, which are expensive, might also deter consumers from using them. Some experts question the viability of the practice, given the potential for consumer backlash. Is the new agreement related to the Credit Card Competition Act? The legal actions that led to the new credit card agreement date back to 2005. But the newer Credit Card Competition Act, proposed in 2023, aims to introduce more competition in the credit card payment system. By creating a cheaper alternative pipeline for processing payments, the proposed legislation is seen as a greater threat to rewards programs. Responding to the just-announced agreement between the credit card companies and retailers, Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, and the lead sponsor of the Credit Card Competition Act, released a statement urging the act's passage. "I fear that this deal only provides temporary concessions negotiated by a few lawyers behind closed doors," he said in the statement. Other experts said the agreement may ease the pressure on Congress to pass the act. "I think it's a way for Visa and MasterCard to show that they are making a good faith effort to help out merchants by lowering the fees they've been complaining about for 20 years, and hopefully enough to let senators know they're doing their part," said Chris Hassan, the social media and brand manager for Upgraded Points, a website that tracks credit card benefits. Separately, the proposed merger between Capital One and Discover, which is pending federal approval, could introduce more competition among credit cards and potentially improve rewards for holders of those cards. What should I do now? The points and payments systems won't change until the agreement is approved, which is expected in late 2024 or early 2025, according to a news release from MasterCard. But the topic should remind travelers of the reality of playing with points. The rules always change. Values tend to fall as redemption levels rise, which companies issuing these currencies are free to adjust at will. "If you have points, spend them," say experts like Sarah Rathner, a travel and credit card specialist at the financial website NerdWallet. "They're not a trophy to dust and admire." That story in the Frugal Traveler, "Credit Card Swipe Fees Are Going Down, Are Points Going With Them?" written by Elaine Glusak. And next up in 52 places to go in 2024, number one, the Path of Totality, North America. Dance, gawk, or run in the dark, but don't look directly at the sun. From the beaches of Mazatlan, Mexico, to the rugged coves of Maberly, Newfoundland, the sky will be the stage on April 8th as a total solar eclipse sweeps across North America. This year, the moon will be near its closest point to Earth, resulting in an unusually wide swath and long-lasting totality. Mexico, Canada, and 13 U.S. states will greet the darkness with celebrations. The Portal Eclipse Festival in Mazatlan promises spiritual growth through DJs, yoga, and more. NASA will be broadcasting from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where $15 will get you admission to a festival and eclipse glasses called, fittingly, the greatest spectacles. On the Canadian side of Niagara Falls, Cosmologists Without Borders will offer space-themed programs. And if you're game to run with a headlamp, consider a race in Millinocket, Maine. You can find an interactive map at eclipse2024.org and a list of activities at nationaleclipse.com. That from Danielle Dowling. Number two, Paris, France, preparing for the Olympics and millions of sports lovers. Already one of the most visited cities in the world, Paris is preparing to welcome millions of travelers this summer as host of the 2024 Olympic and Paralympic Games. It will be the biggest sporting event in the city's history, and to mark the occasion, many well-known monuments are being transformed into sports and entertainment venues. In a first, the Olympics opening ceremony will not be held in a stadium, but outdoors, along the River Seine and near the Eiffel Tower. Outdoor swimming and the paratriathlon will be set against the backdrop of the Pont d'Helena. The Grand Palais, renowned for its vast glass dome, is undergoing an extensive renovation to stage the fencing and taekwondo events. The Grand Gardens of the Château de Versailles, just outside Paris, will be transformed into a gallery and course for the equestrian events. La Concorde will stage the Olympic debut of breakdancing and other sports like skateboarding and three-on-three basketball. And that's all we have time for. Thank you for joining us for the New York Times Travel Section, read by Michelle Wexler.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.